Okay, good morning everybody. This is Bio 231 and it's the 7th of October and we've got maybe two more lectures on muscle. So today we're going to look at some origins and insertion and actions of muscle. You're not responsible for knowing any innervations of muscles. So that's nice. That cuts a lot of memorization out of the work that you have to do to understand muscles. So you got to know the names of muscles. So in lab you've just been going over probably where these muscles are located in the body. You have to know a little bit about origin and insertion, and then that will tell you what the action of that particular muscle is. And then we're going to learn some other little things here and there as we go along today. Alright, so I did run all the tests through the Scantron reader. And I didn't calculate everybody's grade because there was, 95 questions on your test? 90? So I got to count how many you got right, divide by 90, and then I'll know what your percentage is, and multiply that by 210, and then I'll know how many points you have. So it just takes me a little while to do all that little calculation. Okay, then I'll put it on Blackboard for you. Here in my labs, I can show you your tests a little bit later during lab, okay, if you're interested. Okay, let's see. I don't think I have anything else to say, but does anybody have any questions? Anybody have any questions? No? Okay. So I don't have any comments on the test because I just don't know. I think there are a couple of people that got hundreds anyway. I've noticed that. So, yeah, that's pretty amazing. I'm not sure I could get 100 on the test because you got to pay really close attention. You got to bubble in the right mark and all that kind of stuff. Okay. All right, so later on this week, or maybe tonight, okay, or tonight, I'll enhance your weekly activities right under the weekly enhancement button. So I'm going to access at least one website that I'll put in Blackboard for you, right, where you can actually go look at origins, insertions, names of muscles, as well as the action, and you can actually see what the action that's being produced is. All right, and this website is pretty cool because you can actually reflect away or dissect away a number of muscles so that you can actually see the origin and insertion of that one isolated muscle and then see the action that it produces. So that's really handy. Okay, I don't have the button in, this is for the hybrid anatomy class I'm teaching, so it's missing the weekly enhances button. That's what your button is going to be called, weekly enhances. Or weekly enhancements. For my hybrid class, it's just called weekly assignments because it's mandatory that they do them. It's not mandatory that you do, but if you work through these exercises, right, things just sink in a whole lot better. And I had a number of emails saying that they really did like looking over this material. So anything that I do for the hybrid class, except for some testing options, I make available for you guys as well. All right, and so the website I'm going to be looking at, well, we're going to be looking at Chapter 11, Muscles of the Body. And so you would just click on that as well. And so there's objectives. You can read through those objectives. All right, there's a number of just strict labeling exercises. Some of these we've done in lab, for instance, and some lab quizzes I've taken off of these exercises. All right, but these aren't the animations. These are just pictures where you practice labeling. Nonetheless, that's very, very helpful. So, you know, if you're tired of just looking at your book and you want an interactive exercise, drag and drop or whatever, those are handy. Okay, but this is the website that I want to show you about. It's called Get Body Smart. And maybe you've looked at the skeletal system already in this website, but we're going to move on to the muscular system. Okay, so I made some direct links into this website, but if these links don't work, go to this website right here and you can work these different exercises. Well, we're pretty much done with muscles of facial expression and muscles of mastication, so I'm not going to show you a whole lot of this stuff, but usually when we have a muscle, right, so let's just consider what's the function of muscle again, what's it specialized to do? To contract or to shorten. And usually muscles are attached to what? Right, bones. And when a muscle shortens, what happens to the bones? They get closer together, right? And a lot of bones move by angular motions like flexion and extension, rotation or whatever, because of the shape of the joint and the arrangement of muscles across that particular joint. All right, so what do we call a muscle-to-bone connection? Muscle-to-bone. Is a tendon. Yeah, muscle-to-bone is a tendon.
Oh, muscle.
Muscle-to-bone. All right, well, let me go back even a little bit further. What's a bone-to-bone connection called?
That's a ligament.
Now, that's a ligament, right? But a ligament and a tendon is essentially the same material as dense, regular connective tissue, but still, get it straight in your mind, there's a little bit of difference. So most muscles go from one bone to another. They're connected by tendons, and when that muscle contracts, the bones get closer together. And you learned a lot of different ways that bones can move, like flexion and extension. How should you think about the relationship between flexion and extension? Okay. Okay, one is by opposite body compartments. That's really nice. But that's a nice way of thinking about it anatomically. All right. Because if you have flexors in an anterior compartment of your body, you're going to find the extensors in the posterior compartment. That is probably the most important thing that you should become comfortable with. All right, and so I'm really glad you brought that up. All right, so that's a nice anatomical way of thinking about extension and flexion. But there's another way that I want you to appreciate it too, and that's in a functional sense. What's the functional relationship? How would you talk about the relationship in terms of function of flexion and extension? Okay, and what I'm thinking in my mind is that there is antagonism there. Okay, so they produce motions that work in opposition to each other. All right, so flexion and extension are opposite motions. You have different muscles that are antagonistic to each other. Now, what's the beauty of having two systems that work in opposition to each other or through antagonism? What does that provide your body? Okay, and the key words for me are precise control and balance. All right, and it might take you years really to fill in all of the nuances of those terms, but those are the really important terms, and if you can just memorize that and then fill in your understanding as time goes on, that would be really, really great. That's going to be important for the endocrine system, cardiovascular system, how receptors work, not just anatomy, right? So precise control and balance. All right, so the first muscles that we looked at were muscles of facial expression. Right, and there we don't really have antagonistic control of our face. In some respects, I suppose, we sort of do. But there's another strange thing about muscles of facial expression. We said that most muscles attach two different bones together through some kind of contractile element. But muscles of facial expression are attached to bones of the cranium or the face. Remember, you can break the head bones down into cranial bones or facial bones. Right, so muscles of facial expression are attached to bones on one end, but it's a little strange, on the other end, they're not attached to a bone. What are they attached to? Okay, and as a matter of fact, yeah, it's attached to fascia, which is connective tissue, or skin, or other muscles of the face. So that when muscles of facial expression contract, right, bones of your head don't necessarily move, but what? Your eyebrows move, or your lips move, or your forehead wrinkles, or something like that, or your ears wiggles. Anybody really good at wiggling their ears? Oh, you are? You raised your hand? Oh, no, you were just, oh, okay. Okay, so that's one strange thing about facial muscles, all right? They're not connected to two bones. Usually it's between a bone and some skin or muscle or fascia of the face. And I'll point out a couple other skeletal muscles in other parts of your body for your limbs that are connected to fascia as well. But usually in the appendicular parts of your body, it's mostly bone-to-bone connections. So here we have, in this exercise right here, this kind of looks like a weird diagram, but you know what? It's really nice and clear, and you could probably see all the different muscles that you were working on in lab, right? Like the orbicularis oculi, orbicularis oris, right? And these two right here are the zygomaticus, right? The major and the minor. And on this interactive exercise, they only have one that is working, and they're still working on a number of the other ones. But, and it's one of the first ones that we looked at because it helped us understand how we name muscles sometimes by origin and insertion, right? And that would be the what? The occipital frontalis. It has two muscle bellies or two muscle groups. There's an occipital or occipitalis belly, which we can't see, which is posterior, and the frontalis, right? And they're connected by that broad, flat, tendinous sheath that we call, anybody remember what that broad, flat, tendinous sheath? Yeah, aponeurotica, aponeurosis, but it's a broad, flat, tendinous sheath that's on the top of your head. Then you don't have any muscles up there, you have that tendon, okay, or aponeurosis. All right, so we can click on frontalis right here. That loads the diagram, and you can see it reflecting away a bunch of different muscles. So you can actually practice this, move the diagram to see what muscles disappear. This might help you in labeling, at least labeling the different muscles. All right, and then the frontalis is going to be in this region. Okay, over here someplace. All right. So it tells you very nicely what the origin and insertion is. Right, so the origin is the galea aponeurotica, which is the broad flat tendinous sheath, and the insertion is skin around the eyebrows. All right, so and then we get action. And we can just click on this link right here and we can watch what the action is. Right, that's going to do what? That's going to, you know, raise is kind of a little bit of a sloppy anatomic term. You should probably say elevate, right? Or depress, elevate or depress. So it's going to elevate the eyebrows, and of course that's going to wrinkle the forehead as well. All right, so did you see anything change? Can I make it a little bit bigger? All right. So if we raise the, okay, so you can see the eyebrows raising, you can see furrows developing in the forehead right here, or if you just want to move the slider back and forth, all right, you can watch the action. And like I said before, we're not interested in this class for you to know the names of the nerves that innervate that muscle. So origin, insertion, and action. All right, so why is this muscle, the frontalis, different than most of the other muscles that we're going to look at in the body? It's because of the anatomy, the attachments. This muscle has origin and insertion, but what are the attachment points? One is going to be basically bone, right? Would be the occipital bone via the galea aponeurotica. But the insertion is not another bone. It's what? It's actually skin around the eyebrows. Okay, so that's a distinction. Okay, muscles of facial expression. Okay. Okay, I guess I'm going to have to close this window. All right, so let's talk about some muscles that work at the shoulder. All right, so here is a pretty nice diagram. And what are we looking at? We're looking at a nice anterior view. All right, so let's look at the pectoral. You know, we're going to come back to this one. We're going to come back to this one. Let's do arm. All right, and what I want to look at first is the deltoid. Right, so that's a nice muscle that everybody should know because it's one of the muscles that, well, you get your flu shot in that one. All right, and everybody should get a flu shot. I want all of you to get a flu shot in here. Why do I want all of you to get a flu shot? So that I don't get sick, right? So if you do have grandparents at home or somebody that's maybe a little bit immunosuppressed or whatever, all right, maybe you don't want to get a flu shot, but guess what? You can bring the flu home to your family. So if you get a flu shot, that reduces that risk, right, especially if you have other susceptible family members. Okay, so it's a good idea. At least a seasonal flu shot. I don't know about that H1N1 flu shot yet. Okay. All right, so here we have, we've got the org. Well, let's reflect away some of these other muscles and just look at the deltoid. All right, so here a bunch of muscles are disappearing and we're left with the deltoid. So we can get a pretty good impression of what the origin and insertion is. right? The origin is going to be the lateral aspect of the clavicle, going to be the acromion process, and then the scapular spine as well. And the insertion is going to be the deltoid tuberosity, and we can actually take the muscle completely away, and you can see it's nicely color-coded, the origin in red and the insertion in blue, right? And if we want to, I guess we can go back, put the muscle up over here and see where it is, and then we can see what it does. So what is flexion of the shoulder? This is a weird one, okay? Because flexion is what? Decreasing the angle between two joints. But when you move your shoulder, what bones are changing, you know, a nice straight line or a straight angle? That's a really hard one for me to see. Okay, I can appreciate it across my hip when I'm standing erect. My legs are kind of on line with my vertebral column, right? And so with my hip, if I move my thigh up, that for sure is flexion, right? And if I put it down, that's extension. And that same motion, of course, works for your arm as well, right? So flexion and extension, or and hyperextension. So for your humerus, flexion is just moving your arm straight anterior. The extension is bringing it back down to anatomic position. Hyperextension is moving it posteriorly without any kind of rotation. Okay, so when the deltoid, right, contracts, these two points are going to be moved closer together when the muscle contracts. And so if it's the anterior portion of the deltoid that contracts, that's going to produce flexion because it's going to pull the humerus up toward the anterior part of your body because of the origin here on the clavicle. So let's see. Does that happen? Indeed it does. All right, so that's flexion. All right, so I expect everybody to be able to figure out that what arm flexion is across the shoulder, all right, because there's a nice motion. If all parts of the deltoid contract, all right, the arm is not going to be flexed, it's not going to be extended, it's not going to be rotated, it's just going to be raised straight up. And what do we call that? That would be abduction. All right, so here is abduction, if all segments of the deltoid contract. So depending on what segments of the deltoid contracts, your arm can undergo different motion. All right, so if I was going to memorize one, I would say, what? Abduction, because it's moving away from midline. All right, now a really good way to understand muscles is by understanding what muscles are in an opposite body compartment or which other muscles in your body produce an antagonistic motion. So we want to look at not only muscle, so we want to look at muscles that do what? I want to try and find some that don't abduct, but adduct. And let's see if we can make sense of that. All right, so I'm going to go back. And the adductors. Okay. Here's one right here. Latissimus dorsi. So we're looking posteriorly, right? You can always look at this little man right here. And so we're looking posteriorly. Here is the latissimus dorsi, and we can see the trapezius and deltoid and triceps over here as well. All right, but let's isolate this. Oh, we see a bunch of muscles working on the scapula as well. But let's look at the latissimus dorsi. All right, so the origin are the spines of the vertebrae, all right, so thoracic vertebrae. And there's some other parts to it. There's some fascia that the muscle connects to. But the insertion, all right, is right below the intertubercular groove. And that is on the anterior side of the humerus. So we can't really see where it's inserting right here. And can you imagine? So when this muscle contracts, it's going to pull the humerus toward midline. What do we call that motion? That's adduction, right? So the latissimus dorsi works in opposition to that deltoid, right? Because it's an adductor. But that's not the only thing it does. Since it's attached to the anterior part of the humerus, when it contracts, guess what the humerus does? And I'll bend my elbow so that you can see the motion, okay? It's going to pull the anterior part of the humerus toward midline. That would be my hand being toward midline. We call that what? A medial rotation, because it's attached to the anterior side. If it was attached to the posterior side of the humerus, it would cause a lateral rotation, but since it's attached to the anterior side, that's a nice medial rotation. So here is the other action that it does, medial rotation. All right, so what have we seen? We've seen that the adductor and the latissimus dorsi are what? Antagonists. They have to maintain balance so that you can abduct and adduct your arm properly. Okay, another important adductor, all right, is the pectoralis. Okay, so let's get rid of a bunch of these other muscles. So here you can see the origin, the more medial parts of the clavicle, all right, the sternum, and the insertion is mostly on the greater tubercle of the humerus. All right, and so when this muscle contracts, it's going to pull the humerus toward midline, which is what? Adduction. All right, but since the insertion is on the anterior side of the forearm, it's going to medially rotate the humerus. Okay, so the deltoid is antagonistic to both the latissimus dorsi and the pectoralis major. Now here's something else that's kind of interesting. The pectoralis major, right, not only adducts the arm, but it also flexes at the shoulder. Right, because when this muscle contracts, it's going to pull up, right, especially for these upper fascicles right here. It's going to pull the humerus up. That's called flexion, right? So that flexes the shoulder right here. Okay, and let's go back to that latissimus dorsi. What did the latissimus dorsi do? It not only adducted, right? Okay, but when it contracts, when this muscle in the back contracts, it's attached to the anterior part of the humerus, right? It's going to pull the humerus posteriorly. What's that motion when your humerus is pulled posteriorly?
Hyperextension.
Okay, extension or hyperextension. So the pectoralis major and the latissimus dorsi work in opposition to each other in the sense of what? Flexion and extension. So there's extension of the latissimus dorsi. And if we go back to the pectoralis, where is that at? Here. Okay. We see that it flexes. All right, so they're antagonistic to each other in that sense, in terms of flexion and extension. Okay. Let's look at the coracobrachialis. This is a nice muscle, because it tells you what the origin and insertion is just in the name. All right, so what would be the origin of the coracobrachialis? The coracoid process, right? So I've reflected away or erased all of the muscles of the shoulder so that we can see the coracobrachialis. And hopefully you can remember the name of this process right here of the scapula. That's the... Somebody knows. That's the coracoid process, right? And then the insertion is just the medial mid-diaphysis of the humerus. And when this muscle contracts, it's going to pull the humerus toward midline. We call that adduction, right? And when it contracts, it's also going to pull the humerus up toward the coracoid process, and we call that flexion of the shoulder. Right, so yeah, you can watch that diagram and you can actually try to contract that muscle and see what happens. And during the test, you're welcome to do that, but don't punch out who's ever sitting next to you. Okay, so coracobrachialis. And that's really a nice, easy muscle to find in lab as well. Okay, so that's an adductor. So the coracobrachialis works synergistically with the latissimus dorsi and the pectoralis major because those are all adductors. Okay, let's look at some more muscles right here. Okay, biceps brachii. Okay, biceps brachii. Well, let's look at origin and insertion first of the biceps brachii. And because of the name, you know that it has how many origins? It's got two origins and one insertion, which is sort of true. We're going to see that there's like 1.5 insertions. Okay, so let's get rid of some of these muscles. What just disappeared? Deltoid. Now what just disappeared? The pectoralis major. Okay. And let's see. Ooh, I didn't see what moved, went away there. What was that? Oh, that was the brachialis, I believe, that went away. Okay, I didn't see what went away. Ah, latissimus dorsi went away. All right, teres probably minor went away. Subscapularis went away. Coracobrachialis went away. So now we just see the biceps brachii. Oops. Oh, did I crash it? No, not bad. Good. Okay, so red is the origin, and here we see the two origins. One is the, what process does that look like? The coracoid process. Here is the glenoid cavity, right, or glenoid fossa, and there's another little dot right here, right on top of it. That's the supraglenoid tubercle. Is that ringing a bell? Supraglenoid tubercle. All right, so the two origins of the bicep, we have the long head, which goes through the intertubercular groove. It enters the joint capsule, right? So there are tendon sheaths that protect the shoulder from inflammation, and it inserts into the supraglenoid tubercle. The short head of the biceps brachii originates on the coracoid process. So here you can see that the biceps actually goes across the shoulder. So when it contracts, guess what's going to move? The shoulder joint is going to move, right, because the muscle is working across that joint. All right, another thing, the insertion is not on the humerus, but it goes across the elbow to the radial tuberosity right here, and there is some fascia that also helps connect it to the ulna right over here, but we just consider this basically one insertion. All right, so when you think of insertion, what does that mean functionally? Is that the more movable end or the least movable end? Yeah, that's the more movable end of this particular muscle. All right. So when this muscle contracts, all right, it's going to actually flex the elbow, but also it's going to pull the humerus anteriorly. What do we call that motion? Think of your hip if it's not coming to you.
Flexion.
That's flexion. All right. So let's do flexion right here. Indeed, that's flexion. Okay. I agree. Notice in this particular program right here, they don't even mention flexion of the elbow. All right, so a lot of times, and including your book, right, it labels the biceps brachii as being the prime mover of forearm flexion. But that's not even mentioned in this program right here because it doesn't always, not only causes flexion of the forearm, but it causes flexion of the shoulder as well. Okay, so as a matter of fact, I don't really consider the biceps brachii as being the prime mover for forearm flexion. I'll show you another muscle that is, because its sole motion is to perform flexion at the elbow or flexion of the forearm. And, good, I see some people exercising in class. That's always good. Okay, so does anybody have maybe an inkling of what that muscle is that works just across the elbow that produces flexion of the forearm? Okay, and I definitely want you to find that in lab. I know my lab students, I mentioned to them that it's a really easy muscle to miss on a practicum, because if you look from the side of your arm, you see three big muscles. You see the biceps brachii anteriorly, and then posteriorly you see the triceps. What can you tell me about the action of those two muscles? Antagonistic to each other. We won't belabor that point anymore. But another big muscle right in between, and that's the brachialis. So that's the one I'm talking about. So a lot of times when we label the brachialis, people see, oh, well, it's not biceps brachii. It's got to be the triceps. But it's not. It's the prime mover for forearm flexion is the brachialis. All right, so I tell you what. Let's see if we have brachialis in here. Do we have brachialis anywhere? Brachialis? I don't see it. Okay. Let me go back another one. Maybe I can find it someplace. Muscles that act on the forearm. Here we go. Okay. Okay, so let's go to the anterior compartment, right? And we can get all these muscles away. So this deltoid has got to disappear, the pectoralis has got to disappear, the biceps has got to disappear, because we want to look at this muscle that's deep right here. All right, so here we go. And it's cool the way we can get rid of all these muscles. And, oh, I did, for fun, oh, too bad I can't erase that. But that's what? The coracobrachialis, right? All right, so here is the brachialis. So the origin is the anterior diaphysis, right? It's just mid-diaphysis of the humerus. And the insertion is the coronoid process, right, of the ulna. So it goes across only the shoulder, and it causes flexion, right, at the elbow, or flexion of the forearm. So we can do that right here. Okay, so this right here, in my opinion, is the prime mover in forearm flexion. What is a prime mover? It's a muscle, yeah? What's a good definition of a prime mover? It's the muscle of a group of muscles that perform the same motion. That means that they're synergist, but the prime mover is the muscle that's primarily responsible for producing that motion, which means it's the strongest muscle that's producing that motion, right? So it's not really the biceps brachii, it is the brachialis. Okay. All right, let me go back. What did I want to talk about next? I think I want to go back to the shoulder joint. Right here. No, not the shoulder. The arm. Okay. Well, we have some muscles that are fixators. Okay, and we actually have some other muscles that not only fix the scapula, but help in rotating the humerus one way or the other. And these are real important because some of these muscles actually become an integral part of the joint capsule of the shoulder. All right, and you can tell me something about the shoulder because you have such a range of motion of the shoulder, that's an advantage to have, but what's the disadvantage to have such range of motion at the shoulder?
Stability.
Okay, the stability or the degree of injury that can happen at a shoulder, right? It's a relatively weak joint, even though it has all these muscles, but because range of motion is enhanced, it's relatively weak compared to the other ball and socket joint. So there's something called a rotator cuff. And rotator cuff are a bunch of muscles, and as they move to become tendons and insert into the humerus, they actually form part of the joint capsule. All right, so when you damage any one of these muscles, it automatically has a tendency to damage the joint capsule, which is very painful, and it's very inhibiting to using that particular joint. And there's four muscles that make up the rotator cuff. You've probably heard of this term rotator cuff a bunch. Rotator cuff. Okay, so why do we say cuff? I know a bunch of you are thinking of handcuffs. That's okay. Okay, but to cuff is what? To surround something, right? It's almost like a girdle, I suppose. So the rotator cuff is something that completely surrounds the shoulder joint. It's the fibrous capsule. And rotator, what does that mean? It's going to rotate the humerus, which is what kind of motion? Lateral rotation, medial rotation. And in particular, the motion that's most disturbed is a lateral rotation. So most of the muscles that make up the rotator cuff perform lateral rotation, right? Which is a really easy motion to check, right? Just flex your elbow and then move your hand out laterally. That's a lateral rotation. So a lot of people hurt their shoulder and they want to know, well, did they strain a muscle? Or maybe it's a rotator cuff tear. And it's a pretty easy kind of quick diagnosis or check that somebody can make. We're not physicians. We shouldn't really diagnose anything. But we can make some simple checks of our body. And that would be to see if you can laterally rotate your humerus. So how would you check to see if you can laterally rotate? Okay. Easiest thing to do, flex your forearm, right? And then move your hand laterally like this. Or bring it into your stomach and then see if you can move it laterally, right? So, but apply some opposition to it. See if you can exert some force in that direction. And people with rotator cuff tears they would almost scream in agony, okay, if they applied a lot of pressure trying to move their hand out laterally. Yeah. Yeah, especially above your shoulder. So it's hard to, yeah, get dressed or undressed. Okay. But this, that might not be so specific as a lateral rotation, pain with lateral rotation. There can be other damage to the shoulder that doesn't include rotator cuff, which will cause pain when you lift your humerus above your the level of your shoulder. Like even the biceps, if it's damaged, which is not a rotator cuff muscle. So it's not quite as specific. Okay. So what are the muscles of the rotator cuff? Yeah, I got to remember. We got the supra. Okay, so here's one. Supraspinatus. That's one. Okay. Number two. Comment? Oh, you're telling me. Oh, thanks. Yeah, infraspinatus. All right, so just from knowing bones, you should know where some of these things are. Okay. The supraspinatus is where? Superior to the scapular spine, right in the supraspinous fossa of the scapula. Maybe you have a little picture of that. Infraspinatus is inferior to the spine of the scapula in the infraspinous fossa. And then here's a muscle we haven't talked about yet. This is the teres minor. All right, now this is a little bit of a trick. If there's a teres minor, what else do you know? There's a teres major, and what's really important is that you don't confuse the two because the teres major is not part of the rotator cuff. Okay, so it's got to be teres minor. And then the fourth one is the subscapularis. Wow, how did you guys know all this already? Maybe I had it in the homework to do or something for today. The pre-lecture reading assignments, it's probably really helpful to do those, right? If you kind of know what I'm going to talk about in lecture before I actually do it. Okay, so these are the four muscles. The tendons, the insertional tendons of these muscles help make up what? The fibrous capsule of the shoulder. And when any of these muscles get damaged, then that actually disrupts the joint capsule, the fibrous capsule of the shoulder. And then that's very, very painful. So what is this spell to help you remember most of it? S, right? S-I-T-S for rotator cuff. Now the really difficult thing to remember is this T right here is what? Teres minor, not teres major. But we're going to look at the actions of the teres major and teres minor maybe right now, and hopefully, okay, you'll see why we have the teres minor included and not the teres major. So actually, if you think about the name of that structure, rotator cuff, it makes sense. All right, so do we have rotator cuff muscles right here? We sure do have some. I don't see teres minor anywhere. Okay, we got teres. Oh, here's teres minor. Yeah, we do. Okay, well, let's get teres major out of the... let's do what? Supraspinatus. Okay, supraspinatus. This one is... doesn't produce a rotation. This one, okay, supraspinatus. Picture where this one is again. It's where? Supraspinous fossa, which is really high up. What other muscle is located in a superior position to the scapula? Is? Yeah, that deltoid. All right, so the supraspinatus and deltoid, you should have kind of an immediate impression. Well, maybe their actions are going to be pretty similar. All right, so let's take a look. Supraspinatus. Okay. So we're getting rid of all these muscles right here. Blah, 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 blah. And here we're left with the supraspinatus. So here we see the spine of the scapula, the supraspinous fossa. So this is the origin, and the insertion is the greater tubercle of the humerus. So when this muscle contracts, guess what happens to your arm? It's going to pull this lateral part of the head of the humerus toward midline. That's going to abduct, right? Just like the deltoid. So we can check that. Indeed, that's abduction. All right. But you can see how important that is in forming the joint capsule of the shoulder right here. All right. So that's supraspinatus. Infraspinatus. Is that around someplace? Right here. Okay. Can I interrupt that? Yeah. All right. Infraspinatus. In the infraspinous fossa. So that's the origin, the infraspinous fossa. And the insertion, again, is the greater tubercle of the humerus. All right. So when this muscle contracts, right, it's not going to abduct the arm, but it's going to pull the posterior part of the humerus toward midline. So if I bend my elbow and the posterior part of the humerus is pulled toward midline, what's going to be the act? Yeah, it's going to be a lateral rotation, right? Because this anterior part of the humerus is doing what? It's moving laterally. The posterior part is moving medially. Okay, so this produces a lateral rotation. Okay, so hence a nice part of the rotator cuff. All right, let's look for Teres minor. Here's Teres minor. All right, but before we isolate the teres minor, let's review some of these muscles. Well, we've got trapezius, deltoid, the triceps, latissimus dorsi, and the most inferior of the teres group is the teres major. All right, so let's get some of this away. We see the supraspinatus right here, infraspinatus. Okay, and now we're getting close. Oops, let's go back. Here's the teres major. All right, again, its origin is the subscapular fossa, especially this medial border right here. But look where it goes. It goes to the anterior side of the humerus. Here's the teres minor, which originates in the infraspinous fossa, but it inserts into the posterior side of the humerus. All right, so this teres minor works the same way that the infraspinatus works. It's going to cause a lateral rotation because the insertion is on the greater tubercle here, which is on the posterior side of the humerus. So let me get rid of the rest of these muscles. Okay. So here is the teres minor and lateral rotation. And you see it's an integral part of the fibrous capsule of the shoulder. Okay, but not the teres major. Let's go take a look at the teres major. Okay, so here's teres major. The origin is the lower lateral, the lower border, inferior angle of the scapula. The insertion is the anterior part of the humerus. So when this muscle contracts, it's not going to cause a lateral rotation. It's going to pull the anterior part of the humerus toward midline. That's a medial rotation. And notice that the teres major is not involved in forming the joint capsule or the fibrous capsule of the shoulder. It's too inferior for that, right? So it's not a rotator cuff muscle because of that. All right, so medial rotation because of its insertion point. All right, so that's important things to know about the rotator cuff muscles. Oh, I didn't show you the subscapularis. All right, let's see if we can find subscapularis. Okay, so subscapularis. I have to sneeze. Thank you. Maybe we'll just go away. Okay, so here's the teres major, which is not part of the joint capsule, but the subscapularis is. All right, so its origin is the subscapular fossa, which is the anterior part of the scapula. It inserts into the lesser tubercle. All right, and so it's going to pull the anterior part of the humerus toward midline. That produces a medial rotation, Okay, just like that. All right, so I think this website is really handy because you can really see nicely the origins and insertions of these various muscles. Okay. So what didn't we talk about on this slide so far? We're doing pretty good with most things except for the triceps. That's one thing that we haven't looked at yet. Okay, so tell me something about the triceps. How are you going to get oriented with the triceps? What should you know about it? And somebody's saying it's antagonistic to the biceps. Fantastic, right? You can memorize all of these different muscles and their actions and origins and insertions, but if you understand the relationship between different muscles, it just makes it a whole lot easier. Okay. So biceps, you already probably know before you took an anatomy class. What body compartment is the biceps brachii in? Biceps brachii. Hey. Okay. It's going to be anterior in anatomic position, anterior arm, okay, biceps. And the triceps is going to be the posterior arm, and somebody already told me that they're antagonistic to each other, so you know it's going to be in the opposite body compartment, producing the opposite motion. All right, so here we have a posterior view of the shoulder, and, oh, let's go to triceps brachii. All right, so how many origins does the triceps have? It's got three origins, right? And that's, you know that just from nomenclature. So we got rid of the trapezius, and we just got rid of, deltoid, right? And then we're going to get rid of the supraspinatus, and then we're looking at the infraspinatus, but it's going to probably go away. Okay, now which one goes away? Teres minor. Did you see that teres minor go away? I put it back, take it away. And then probably the teres major, and then latissimus dorsi, and now we see some parts of the triceps muscle, right? And so this is going to be antagonistic to the biceps. And we said that the biceps does what? It flexes the arm, so the triceps extends the arm at the shoulder. Okay, but let's look at the origins and insertions. Here we see the long head going across the shoulder joint, right, and originating from the infraglenoid tubercle. Yeah. Oh, I got a sign-in sheet. Thank you. I got it right here. Okay. Go ahead, sign that sign-in sheet. Pass it around. Okay. Okay, what was funny? I want to do it again. Okay. Because sometimes anatomy is not so funny. Okay. So triceps brachii, it's got three origins, right? The long head to the infraglenoid tubercle, right? So there's a rough spot right inferior to the glenoid fossa, right, or glenoid cavity. The lateral head right here is just the diaphysis of the humerus. And the insertion, let's see if we can find the insertion, it's on the ulna. And this big bony prominence on the posterior side of the ulna, which y'all should know, that's the olecranon process. So that's the insertion. All right, so when this muscle contracts, it's going to pull the cork, the olecranon process superiorly, and that extends the forearm. Okay, but also when this muscle contracts, it's going to pull the humerus posteriorly, and we call that extension. All right, so that's extension. Okay. All right, so here is the origin of the long head of the triceps. Here is the insertion. Okay, so we looked at all these muscles. Not bad. All right, so does anybody have any questions on these muscles right here? Muscles that act on the arm. All right, let's go find some other muscles. Okay. Forearm. Yeah, let's look at these. All right. Ah, did we look at brachii? Not entirely. We haven't looked at the brachialis yet. All right, but what is noteworthy about the brachialis? I belabored this point a little bit earlier. It's the prime mover of forearm flexion. Okay? So let's get rid of some of these guys. Let's get rid of the deltoid and the pectoralis major. All right, deltoid, pectoralis major. Oh, what was that that went away? I can't see what went away. The biceps brachii just went away. All right, because I don't see anything going across the head of the humerus. All right, let's get rid of the latissimus dorsi, teres minor, subscapularis, get rid of the coracobrachialis, and we're left with the brachialis. And we can see it does not go across the shoulder. Its origin is the mid-diaphysis of the anterior humerus, and it inserts into the coronoid process of the ulna. So when this contracts, it moves the ulna up toward the humerus. And what do we call that motion? That's flexion of the elbow, okay? And this is a big, huge muscle deep to the biceps brachii, right? It's just as big, maybe even bigger than the biceps brachii, and it's just as massive as the triceps, which you see in the posterior part of the arm. Okay. Let's see what we can look at here. All right, so sometimes students find muscles of the forearm pretty confusing. All right, and indeed there are, I don't even know how many muscles there are. So let me just guess, maybe 30 or 40 muscles. All right, but we only have to know a very small subset. And this is how to get started. Okay, in anatomy, start with something that's easy to recognize. All right, and the muscles of the forearm that are really easy to recognize are muscles that make this V right here. See this little V shape right here? And where you find those muscles, if you're in anatomic position, and you can do this with the models in lab, right, and start to pronate your hands a little bit and then look straight down, right, so that you're looking at your thumb and you look straight down, you're going to find that V that forms right there. So pronate a little bit and look straight down. And what muscle did I want to look at here? Did I say brachioradialis? Okay. So brachioradialis is the biggest and strongest muscle in your forearm. All right. So here is the brachioradialis forming the lateral part of the V. The medial part of the V is made by this little muscle right here called the pronator teres. So guess what muscle you're using, right, when you start to rotate your thumb that's lateral to more anteriorly and then finally medially like that. Guess what muscle you're using? Because the action is called pronation, right? So you're using the pronator teres to do that, right? So don't be so surprised that you can just see it right there. All right, so the let's get back to the brachioradialis. Okay, so let's get rid of a bunch of these other muscles. Oh, there, the pronator teres went away. Brachioradialis goes from the medial epicondyle on the humerus down toward pretty close to the styloid process of the radius right here. So it doesn't go across the wrist. It only goes across the elbow. So what joint is going to articulate when the brachioradialis contracts? Only the elbow, right? So that's going to flex the forearm at the elbow. All right, so that's flexion. All right, what other muscles did we look at that flex at the elbow? We looked at two already. What was the prime mover for forearm flexion? The brachialis, thank you, brachialis, and also the biceps brachii, right? So the brachioradialis, the brachialis, and the biceps brachii, they're all synergists with forearm flexion, but which one is the biggest and strongest? It's got to be the brachialis, right? So that's the prime mover. All right, so again, you can see really nicely the origin and insertion. Okay, so that's the brachioradialis. So let's go back. All right, here we can see the pronator teres. So let's isolate on the pronator teres. Do I have one here? Yes, right here. All right, so this is kind of looking at the lateral part of the forearm once again. So let's get rid of a bunch of these muscles and leave the pronator teres. All right, so the origin, there's a humeral head and an ulnar head, and let's just pick the humeral head right here. The medial epicondyle of the humerus, right, the brachioradialis was on the lateral epicondyle, and the insertion is the middle lateral surface of the radius, so mid-diaphysis, but a lateral surface of the radius. So when that muscle contracts, it's going to pull the radius over the ulna, like that, and we call that pronation. Okay, but it also works across the elbow a little bit. It also causes a little flexion. But let's see. Let's see if we have a good understanding of what pronation is. Show me what pronation is. Okay. This motion when your hands, when the palms face posteriorly. So right now, our little robot right here, the palms are facing anteriorly. I would expect them to move what? Posteriorly. Let's see what happens. Did they get it right? Oh, perfect. Look at that. Okay, so that's really nice. And because it goes across the elbow, it's a weak flexor of the elbow as well. Okay, so that's the place to get started. Looking at, let's go back. Okay, for looking at all these muscles of the forearm. So what two muscles are you going to immediately key on? The ones that form that B. The little tiny dinky one is the pronator teres, and the big massive one right there is the brachioradialis, right? And that's kind of handy, brachioradialis. It doesn't tell you what the action is, but it tells you what the origin and insertion is, right? It inserts into the radius, the styloid process of the radius. Okay, some other muscles in the forearm that you have to know. Let's see where they are. Thigh forearm. Maybe they're in here. Okay, these are good. You have to know maybe six other muscles in lab, okay? And these are really easy to know because some are going to be in the anterior compartment, and what are all of these muscles going to do for you? They're going to flex something. They're either going to flex your digits or they're going to flex the wrist, right? And so, since they're all flexors, they're called flexors. If they flex the digits, they're called flexor digitorum. Okay. If they flex the carpals, they're called flexor carpi something. Right. And if it's a lateral muscle, it's a flexor carpi radialis. If it's a medial muscle, it's a flexor carpi ulnaris. Right. Okay. So let's take a look at some of these right here. And then there's a little strange one right here, palmaris longus. Let's see if I can say anything about the palmaris longus. Okay, so flexor carpi radialis. All right, it's a flexor, so you know it's anterior arm. And it's going to work on the wrist, and it's going to be the lateral muscle. So it's going to be over here someplace. All right, so let's take a look. Flexor carpi radialis. All right, so we're looking anterior arm. And you can see all the muscles. Oh, like what's this one right here? Pronator teres, right? And then brachioradialis. And we're looking for what? The flexor carpi radialis. So we want to look radially. So here's the thumb. Here's digit number one. So this is lateral, right? And, all right, so here is flexor carpi radialis. It's next to the pronator teres. All right, so you got pronator teres, flexor carpi radialis. All right, the next muscle group, and this will be really nice and easy to see on the mannequins, this is going to be the palmaris longus. And then the next one medially is, it's going to be a flexor, okay, and it inserts into the carpals right here, so this is the flexor carpi ulnaris, right, because here is radialis, laterally, and then medially is the ulnaris. All right, so let's see if we can isolate the flexor carpi radialis. All right, so it is the medial epicondyle of the humerus, right, and it inserts into the second and third metacarpals right here. So it flexes the wrist, but it doesn't directly affect the digits right here. Okay, flexes. Yes. Radial deviates. That's a new term to me. Okay, that makes sense. Okay. I would maybe call that abduction of the wrist. Oh, it says abduction. Okay. Abduction of the wrist. Okay, because it's going to pull the wrist medially as a result of that. Okay. Palmaris longus. Okay. Okay, so what did we say was a nice distinguishing feature of muscles of facial expression compared to all the other muscles that we've been looking at today in the shoulder joint and the upper appendage, the upper limb? Yeah, facial muscles insert into skin or fascia, right? But all the other muscles that we've looked at insert into bones that then approximate each other when that muscle contracts. Here's a muscle, okay, which is more similar to facial muscles because look at the insertion. We call it the flexor retinaculum and the palmar aponeurosis, which is like what? That broad flat tendinous sheath you have on the top of your head. It doesn't insert into a bone. All right, it inserts into soft tissue. So the retinaculum, I see the retinaculum right here. You have a much better picture in your book. But what the retinaculum is like a circular ligament that goes around your wrist that holds all of these tendons for all the flexor carpi muscles and digitorum muscles, right? So that when you flex, they don't pop up away from your wrist. It holds them all together as a bundle. Okay, and that's something that produces carpal tunnel syndrome. When you have repetitive motion, it can cause an inflammation of this retinaculum right here, and then it's very hard to flex your digits or wrist or extend your digits or wrist as a result of that. Okay, so the palmaris longus, let's see if we can find it. Well, how do you get started? Look for the V, pronator teres, brachioradialis, and then we've got the flexor carpi radialis, the flexor carpi ulnaris, and in between is the palmaris longus. All right, so let's get rid of some of these muscles. All right, palmaris longus right here. And the origin is the medial epicondyle of the humerus, and the insertion is what? The soft tissue of the hand, the palm of the hand. And notice how big and long this tendon is right here. Really big and long. Sometimes when you need a tendon in a part of your body, right, this is a place where a physician might go to harvest this particular tendon, okay, and put it in some part of your body that has a damaged ligament or tendon and just replace that damaged tendon or ligament. Okay, because you can imagine since this is such a small dinky muscle right here, it's not even connected to bone, it's just connected to soft tissue. It certainly can't be a prime mover of any kind of motion in your body, right? It's a very, very weak muscle that basically just tenses the skin on the palm of your hand, right? Not a very important kind of motion. So a lot of times this tendon is sistered in with other tendons or ligaments in your body that have been damaged, right? So that's why I kind of mentioned the palmaris longus. All right, so you can have pretty much normal function of your hand and wrist if you're missing that palmaris longus because it's not very important. But it's nice to have it there in case you need a tendon in some part of your body that gets damaged. Okay, so flexor carpi ulnaris, we've talked about that already, but let's just isolate it one more time. All right, well, I tell you what, let's put it all back together. So let's just take it from the top. We got what, the pronator teres, brachioradialis, and then the flexor, so we're in the anterior part of the arm right now, flexor carpi radialis, the pronator teres, flexor carpi ulnaris. So this is the one that we want to look at. Okay, so we've isolated it now to the medial epicondyle of the humerus, that's the origin, and the insertion is, okay, at the base of the fifth metacarpal, right? So here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And so that's going to cause abduction, okay, as well as flexion. Depends on what other muscle groups are going to be used. All right, so if you look at the posterior forearm, it's really no more complicated than that, right? So laterally, you're going to have, what, extensor, carpi, radialis. What, then medially will be extensor, carpi, ulnaris, right? And then in the middle, actually, you have some strong muscles for extending your digits. So that would be the extensor digitorum. So let's go see if we can find some of these. All right, so the first muscles we looked at are what? In the anterior compartment, like the pronator teres, right? And in the posterior compartment, we've got the extensor carpi radialis, the extensor digitorum, and the extensor carpi ulnar. So let's take a look at the... So what are we looking at? We're looking at the posterior compartment right here. Okay, this guy you don't have to know. So don't get confused, the pronator teres with the acconius. What did we want to look at? Extensor carpi radialis. So should we be looking over here or over here? Number one or number two? We're going to be looking for extensor carpi radialis. So number one or number two? Number one, yeah, because here's digit number one, right? There's a radius. All right, so let's get rid of some of these muscles. Okay, so extensor carpi radialis, so from the lateral epicondyle of the humerus down to number two, metacarpal. And so when this muscle contracts, right, it's going to cause abduction, okay, as well as extension. All right, so here is abduction. We're looking at this diagram here, abduction or extension, right? So if both the extensor carpi radialis and the extensor carpi ulnaris contract, then that's going to cause extension. But if the extensor carpi ulnaris doesn't contract, that's going to cause abduction. Okay? Okay. All right, so I don't think I'm going to show you the extensor carpi ulnaris. You can look at that, but maybe I will show you the extensor digitorum. So extensor digitorum is going to be between the carpi radialis and carpi ulnaris. All right, so where is that? Right here. So here is extensor digitorum muscle. All right, so from the lateral condyle and epicondyle of the humerus, it goes through the retinaculum, underneath the retinaculum, and then all of these tendons, right, insert into the various digits, but not the thumb, right? So digits, what, 2 through 5, because there's a different muscle that controls the thumb. You don't have to know that one. Okay. So when this muscle contracts, what does that do? That extends the wrist. What does it say about fingers? Ah, okay. Both. Extends the fingers because it's a digitorum. Okay. All right, so I think you all can use this website and have some fun with it, all right, to get some pictures in your mind of what these different muscles, where you find them, what the origin and insertion is, and the action. But don't forget about all these other labeling exercises, okay, that we have in Blackboard. So you can practice labeling all these other muscles, okay? Does anybody want to practice labeling some of these since you're here? What the heck? Let's see what I can remember. Let's see if they work. Let's see if the links work. Doesn't look like the link is working. Oh, okay, so people are wondering, what do you have to know for the test? All right? Okay. Well, look to your lab manual because there's a list of every particular muscle that you have to know, and then origin and insertion. All right, so if you look at this diagram that I have right up over here, some of these muscles may or may not be in your lab manual. So the ones, so you don't have to memorize this diagram. You have to know the ones that are in your lab manual. And the actual figures that are going to be on the lecture test are not these interactive, not the figures that have been interactivized, if that's a word. It's the what? The real figures that you have in your textbook. Okay? I don't think I'm going to cross any off of the lab manual. Yeah, because that's a really small subset. Well, there's a levator palpebrae superioris. Okay, you should just know that from nomenclature. But that's not an exam figure, for instance. Okay? So here's just a drag and drop. What would you want to do with biceps brachii? Probably right here. What does this guy look like? Okay, here's brachioradialis here. All right, deltoid is here. Clavicle is here. All right, pectoralis major. Ah, we're just getting a little glimpse of a triceps muscle. Yeah. Yeah, well, you should tell me what you would like to see.
What do you have so far? You have done.
Yeah, give me an email.
Okay.
Are you in lab today? No, you're Monday.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, give me an email. Okay. So these online exercises are really helpful. Now, there's something else, too, that you have available to you. And let's see, where's that? Course documents. Okay, here are a bunch of videos. I don't know if you've used videos for the first test or not. I don't know if I had any. Yeah, I had a vertebrae video. Here are some of the muscles of the upper appendage. Okay, especially the forearm. All right, but also what? The biceps brachii, brachialis, coracoid brachialis, and triceps. So these are on the actual models that you have on the practicum. All right, so you can download those and put them on your computer or watch them and listen them, but don't upload them to another website anywhere at the moment, okay, because I'm getting them captioned. And so it's really important to get them captioned before I really publish them someplace. So you can check spelling. Okay, who's got any questions? Questions? Yeah. Next semester, yeah, I'm scheduled to teach anatomy again, yeah. Are you going to warn people? Ah, no, don't take anatomy next semester. And I'm teaching physiology too. And so, yeah, so if you know people that want to sign anatomy, you know, give them fair warning. It takes a lot of time outside of class to learn anatomy. And that's even true, or even more so true, of physiology. So, just, yeah, be kind of aware of that. So, okay, so that's it for today.